You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network.
Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Guys, I've got a man with me who looked across the soccer landscape and saw something that had no history. But let's not talk about Chelsea Football Club. Guys, I've got Ryan Kelly with me. Ryan, say hello to the folks.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Ryan, I appreciate you coming on. Got a lot of questions for you. We're kind of wrapping up the season. So I just kind of want to ask you, coming from an educationer's background, letter grades for the men and the women.
Interesting. Okay. Well, start with the women. I think that they, I would say A-. For them, you know, I think they did everything that we could have possibly expected of them, short of, you know, winning that last game. And it was just a phenomenal year across the board. Stacy, Lydia, and Megan just did a tremendous job leading this expansion for us, and really became not just the talk of, you know, our area, but nationally. You know, our attendance put us at 10th nationally for any level. For the women's game, which is we're extremely proud of, to have cities like Portland, New York, and then Asheville among that list is pretty great. And then on the field, you know, we dominated the competition all year long and just slipped up, fortunately, there at the end. And we had, you know, we were dealing with some injuries to some key players at that time, but, you know, I think we had the quality to go through. It was just a bad day for us. But still very proud of what we accomplished, and I think they certainly set the foundation for what we're looking to do, and that's to win a national championship. For the men, I would say I think a B would be appropriate. You know, we fell short of what we were looking to do this season, but we were able to overcome some late season adversity where it looked like we were certainly trending to miss the playoffs altogether, and we're able to go down to New Orleans and get a great win on the road to get into the playoffs and what was a crazy night tracking all the results. That was a lot of fun for us. I'll certainly remember that for a long time. And then to go to Nashville and really put it on them. And they were lucky to score a goal in that game.
Well, Parker had to keep up the tradition of...
yeah, clean sheet's not really our style, and he knew that. But yeah, so we fell short of what we were looking to do, but we were able to end the season with a good taste in our mouths and get the first playoff win in our history. So certainly a positive there, and I think we have a lot to build on.
Can you explain a little bit about what happened with the Carolina Rapids declining their playoff bid?
Sure. Yeah, that was a very interesting time for us. You know, we went into our final game of the year at Oak City with the mindset that we knew we had to win this game to advance. And that was our mindset going in. It's what we knew we had to do, from the coaching staff to the players, supporters, that was the mindset. And so when we fell in that game, we had debriefed. You know, we released a lot of our players and we're coming to terms with what's next. You know, it hurt for a while, but pretty quickly we all kind of just started thinking about what we needed to do to reach our goal of winning a national championship. So we were not aware at that time that this was going to be a possibility. And so when that possibility did come up, we had probably what was the most frantic 24-hour period in Nashville City history trying to make it happen, because, you know, we're a soccer club and we want to play soccer games, and we were given an opportunity to go do so. In the end, we were not able to do that simply for out of the safety of our players. We had a number that we felt that if we went down and played that game, we did not have the safety and well-being of our players where it needed to be to do that. So unfortunately, we had to pass. I will say that we do think it's pretty disgraceful that a team would choose to participate in the league and choose not to move on. We think that's unacceptable, and we plan on addressing such at our winter meetings this fall.
So jumping around, actually, I've got that kind of listed. How does that work in the WPSL in terms of advocating for change? I not only completely agree with you that that's kind of an insult to the other five teams in the table, what Carolina decided to do, but I also think it's ridiculous that only one team out of each conference kind of advances forwards without the ability to have the playoffs.
Right.
How does that change happen?
So that's a great question. And honestly, this was, as kind of the last week developed, it was a huge challenge for us from a communication standpoint, where the women had been dominant all year long, and we had to explain to our supporters that they were missing the playoffs, while our men, who had just spent the last 3 weeks really struggling, were able to go to the playoffs. And it really, the two leagues at this level are largely member-run. So the member teams are allowed to do essentially whatever they want to do, as long as it's reasonable and all the members within the conference agree. So on the men's side, in the NPSL, it's a priority for the teams, the vast majority of the teams in the conference, to create as many home games as possible. And so a conference tournament is a great way to do that, and high-level games that attract a lot of interest. So we have a expanded playoff on the men's side for that reason, to have more home game opportunities. This was our first season in the WPSL, so we're still learning what the landscape is like. I think it's just the simplest way to put it is that there are fewer teams in the WPSL that are looking for those home game opportunities, because most of the teams in the WPSL don't do what we do. This is our first season. We set the all-time attendance record on opening night, and we were top in the country for attendance. That's something that we want to be kind of standard bearers and drive more teams and just kind of show them the possibilities that are out there, so that we can create an atmosphere within the league where teams are looking for to playing more games and want to, play more home games in front of their fans. And that disparity exists in the men's league as well. It's just there are more teams on the men's side right now, like Chattanooga and Detroit, that do want to host these high level home games. So it's really it's recruiting more teams locally to do what we do.
So, and on the men's side, how, with the rapid expansion, you just had Greenville come in. What does that mean for our Southeast division? Is that something that, Greenville's getting a second team, albeit a tier above, but is there more room for expansion? Can you explain a little bit possibly about how last year Chattanooga and New Orleans were on the opposite side of a split division,
yep,
and then how it came together? And are there any rumors or speculation that other clubs might be coming in?
Yeah, my understanding, and my limited 2-year experience, and then based on looking back over the last probably 5 to 10 years, is that every year it's going to be a fairly fluid situation. I think the big difference from last year to this year was 10 teams last year and 8 teams this year, with Memphis and Birmingham moving on.
Did they fold, or did they?
Birmingham kind of evolved into the USL Birmingham project. And then Memphis was bought out by the USL project as well. Although Birmingham continued play this year, and I think Memphis played as well, but now that brand is, everybody handles it differently. A lot of times it is, either moving over to the PDL or up to USL. As far as future expansion, I think there are many more opportunities out there. 24 months ago, there was no team in Asheville, and now Asheville is a top 5 market nationally. So to think that we're close to saturation, I think, is misguided. I think that there's dozens more Ashevilles out there, just waiting to be, started in the right situation. And we're always open to kind of coaching cities and organizations into making that jump. I had a great relationship with Marco in Greenville long before they were announced into the league. And you know, it was a pleasure working with them and getting them in. Obviously, tremendous asset to the conference. Really unhappy with the way that turned out personally for us, but that's on my mind, and we'll rectify that sooner rather than later. But yeah, you know, there's a couple great teams in Charleston and Savannah. You know, the Clovers we had up last year and this year, they were coming, but we got rained out. So there are organizations that have the potential to move on up and join us.
So one of the things I really enjoyed last year, and I know we had that opportunity with the Clovers this year, unfortunately that 3 weeks of rain just knocked it out, but we also had the postseason kind of friendly with Chattanooga, and we had the game against Tri-Cities. Is there something in the future that we're kind of looking at to do more of those collaborations, even if it's maybe even participation in an external cup or tournament?
We're always open to games that make sense for both parties. The thing that kind of binds us is the short season, and we're already asking a lot of our players. We have a lot of games with, you know, 2 or 3 day turnarounds. So, you know, it really comes down to the same decision we made with the women's team. We need to guarantee the safety of our players first and their well-being, because many of them do, you know, they're moving back on to their college season. So that'll always be our first priority. But if it's something that makes sense in the schedule, you know, I know like the Tennessee teams, they have like the Volunteer Shield, and a lot of that works because those teams exist within the same structure, so the games are already happening. I would love for something like that to happen in North Carolina. Unfortunately, I think we're the only NPSL club in North Carolina. So that presents some unique challenges. But yeah, always open to discussions with teams at our level or at higher levels.
So within the NPSL, Chattanooga is just an institution, obviously. Greenville kind of has this, they took our young startup success story. What is Asheville's reputation now? You just mentioned we're a top five market. You know, Detroit's kind of graduating out of things. Where do we exist now?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think from the very beginning, this is something that we wanted to develop organically. We didn't really want to shove anything down anybody's throat. I think that Asheville is known for having one of the best, if not the best, home environments in the entire league. You know, Chattanooga it's phenomenal what they do, but I think playing in a stadium that large, in my opinion, is kind of a detriment. I think our atmosphere is better because it is more confined. I think Detroit City, honestly, might be kind of the best of both worlds, where they have a smaller venue and they pack it out. But I know for a fact that when players come to play here, regardless of how the game plays out, they're always just kind of in awe of the environment, and that's a tribute to the South Slope Blues and all of our supporters who have been there with us since day one. As far as on the field, I think this is really one of our biggest opportunities to develop what it means to play Asheville City. I think when we see Chattanooga on the schedule, we know what that means on the field and off the field. They have a reputation for a style of play and what they do. And that's something that that we want to build. Continuity is important to us, and we think that a lot of the most successful teams nationally, they're successful for that reason, that they have a foundation. Every year they're not hitting the reset button. And so it's a priority for us to build some continuity and really year to year fine-tune, looking for smaller pieces to really get where we need to be rather than starting from scratch all the time. So on the field, still looking to develop what it means to be Asheville City. And I think the women's team, I think, are well on their way. People know when they come to Asheville, they're more than likely than not to catch a beating. So for the men's side, I think we took steps in the right direction from where we want, the way we want to play. You know, sound defensively, and what was missing for us this year was just the goal scoring piece. You know, we just couldn't put the ball in the net, which turns out to be pretty important in soccer. So I really liked what we did defensively, and I think we can build on that and fine tune where we want to go in the future.
So when as management do you guys kind of expect to have it's kind of an inside out season? You know, so often sports, especially soccer, Premier League, MLS, you've got a 10-month season and then a two-month off season.
Yeah.
This is obviously flip-flop. So when do you attempt to make decisions based on, like, if Mick is coming back, or when do you start to court the other players, Jamie, Cameron, the guys that do leave the Asheville area into coming back?
Yeah, we're working on that right now. So we start right away. This is it is unfortunate the way that we have such an extended off season, and we're hopeful that our trajectory allows us to get closer to a more expanded season sooner rather than later. But yeah, that work has begun right now to figure out what those next steps are and where we need to go, both on the men's and women's side.
What does Chattanooga do? You mentioned it, and Pat and I kind of talked about it on our last podcast, very much what you were just saying, that like when you play Chattanooga, even just saying Chattanooga, a certain image kind of arises in your head.
Yeah.
What are they doing that Asheville, just in their second year, can't do yet?
Right.
But you see a path to being able to do, because their coach has been there.
Yeah. Years since their inception, yeah.
Yeah. So what advantages do they have, or what do we need to replicate to get there?
Yeah, so they're extremely well organized and disciplined. And I think that comes from having players that know one another. One of the biggest challenges of this season is that you bring guys in from all over the place. You have no preseason, and in 2 months it's over. So just by the time you're starting to get to know someone, it's time to head back. So what Chattanooga does well is that they have a core of players that return every single year. And so they know each other, they know what they're doing, they know what the system is. And that's a huge advantage to them. That's one of the reasons why I hope we never play them really early in the season. But yeah, it's something they do really well. And another team that's been around for a long time, the Silverbacks, you know, they have an identity, and you know, they
don't always have a home pitch, but they have an identity.
No, we could do a separate podcast on that alone. But you know, on the field, they're always, you know, very dangerous and athletic. They can just run for days. They're very fast. And I think those are things that only time builds that. Time and conscious, smart decision making, which we, in spite of ourselves, try to do every day. But yeah, I think that with Gary in our first year and now Mick, I think that we are laying that foundation. And I think it's a lot to ask through 2 years to have a finished product in that respect. But I think we're moving in the right direction. I feel good about it.
And then in terms of the women, you mentioned how Stacy, and we mentioned it on past podcasts, Stacy just kind of came in and put her stamp on it. She obviously has the pedigree, having played for the U.S. Women's National Team. Lydia having played professionally, Megan having played professionally. Do you see a more rapid path to success with them, with the women, in terms of one of my favorite things that happened this year was catching, I don't remember who it was, it may have been Oak City or Beaufort, but when they left, I had people texting me screen caps of their players' Twitter's accounts saying like, wow, it was really nice playing in front of, you know, oh my gosh, that was amazing. I've never played in front of that many people.
Right.
Asheville will always kind of have a built-in recruiting advantage, because who wouldn't want to spend the summer here in this environment? What do you see for them? Because the two clubs do seem to, you're talking about this decision-making with the men, and it has to be very methodical and procedural. Mm-hmm. The sky's kind of the limit with the women. Where do you see that happening, and how quickly?
Yeah, well, I think the decision-making, the process is generally the same across both clubs. But they're certainly accelerated in just that, just what Stacy, Lydia, and Megan bring, not just from a staff standpoint, but you know, they're part owners of the team. And that it's kind of hard to explain the value in that, in just really having that intrinsic motivation and ownership over the finished product. And I think you're right, you know, just from the 7 home games we played this year, really set the tone for next year. I I fully expect Asheville to be the number one destination for the top talent at this level next year, and I expect us to challenge for a national championship. You know, we'll be competing against the likes of some of those kind of pro reserve teams, but I think we can put a team together that can compete and win. But it's really, they really set the tone to where our best players this year are now going back to their teams and saying what a great experience this is. One big difference between the men's and women's game, just from my early observations, is that there are more men looking for these opportunities in the summer than women are. Whereas on the men's side, it's almost an expectation for the top players. They're either going to train at MLS clubs or they're going to go PDL or NPSL. On the women's side, there are so fewer opportunities that it's really not an expectation. When we were recruiting the team this year, when we were asking players about their availability, it almost seemed like they hadn't considered playing in the summer. So I think that Asheville City will be part of encouraging more women who otherwise may not have considered playing in the summer to do so. And I think that will open the door to a lot of talent for us.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think it's fascinating that nationally the men continue to struggle on an international stage. The women have no problem doing that at the top level, but there's only 9 professional teams.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
There's no, the WPSL is the second tier league.
Right.
And yet there's still not that kind of intrinsic idea of, oh, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to move up, this is the way to do it. But I think between seeing what Parker was able to do this season,
yes,
and knowing that she's going to go back to Hotbed, play against other SEC players and talk about Asheville, Brooke at UNC, I think the seeds are planted, and I completely agree that I would expect a very strong team next year. Updates, Memorial, renovations.
Yeah, so this is a big part of my specific job within the club. The second round of public input will be beginning soon. They're hiring the design consultant for the second phase, which will be the critical phase in deciding what the facility looks like. So obviously we're advocating for a facility that both meets our needs right now and is a facility that meets our needs for the near and long term and where we think we can grow. And I think the strongest argument that we've made is our supporters. You know, selling out that stadium multiple times for the first time in over 50 years is what I've been told from Parks and Rec, and that's a pretty powerful statement for what the public wants to see in that venue. But it is a multi-use facility, so we're working with other stakeholders and the local neighborhoods, for example. I mean, it's a massive impact on the people who live in that area. So we want to be good neighbors and make sure that we're working towards a mutually beneficial solution. So we're very active in that process, and very soon there will be opportunities for the public to get involved and tell the city what they want to see there. So we'll be relying on the South Slope Blues and all of our supporters to make that known.
Do you guys have any plans to create any, whether it be formal or informal, partnerships over the course of the offseason? And just two examples that pop to mind, even though they're like diametrically opposite, are what Nashville Soccer Club and Inter Nashville did this past year. I know we remain a college-based team, and so therefore what they did may not be doable. But is there an opportunity for loans or... I hesitate to call them trades of a college level, if there's players or I don't know, anything along those lines?
We're always open to partnerships that are mutually beneficial. With that said, I think that we like the identity that we have, where we bring in elite level college players in an effort to put the very best youth and adult local players in that environment and raise that level over time. That's really what we're trying to do, and we think that's what this level supports. With what we saw with Inter Nashville and Nashville SC this this year, I mean, we saw full well they made that transaction the morning of our game. We found out about it on Twitter. So, you know, I don't really agree with that approach. I think that approach alienated the college player rather than whatever upside they gained from it, and it wasn't much. We beat them twice after that happened. So that approach I do not think is a good fit for what we do. If we found another team at our level where something like that would make sense for both, we'd be open to it. But at the same time, when you're playing such a short season, it's really hard to make kind of moves like that within the year without really disrupting whatever chemistry that you were able to build in that short amount of time. So short answer to that is not specifically right now, but like I said, if there's a good opportunity, we're not going to pass it up.
And the other side of that is kind of what Greenville FC and Greenville Pro Soccer have done, which is an appropriation of the One City, Two Teams hashtag, but also the
misappropriation.
Yes. but also deciding not necessarily to work together.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Is Greenville a city that's going to be able to support that? And without, I mean, I know where your loyalties probably lie, but do you think that'll be a detriment to Greenville FC?
Yes, I do. It is hard for me to see how a city the size of Greenville, which is comparable to Asheville.
They don't think so, but yeah. it's true.
Yeah. could support two teams at the level they need to be supported to not only survive but thrive, because that should be the goal. The goal shouldn't be to have as many clubs that can barely get by. It should be, you know, what's best for soccer in this area and what's going to drive it forward. In some places, it might be that another club is what's needed at a higher level. And if you just had to ask me honestly if that's what's going on in Greenville, I would just honestly tell you no. I do not think that. I think what Greenville FC did this year, despite, you know, beating us twice, which I still think about, you know, every night before I go to bed and every morning when I wake up, they just did a phenomenal job with building not just Greenville FC, but just soccer in general. I mean, they've really pushed soccer forward in that area, and that's what you should look for. So now we're entering an off season that'll be very interesting for them to see how that plays out. And hopefully it's in the best interest of the game, but I'm not certain that all the moves that are being made are doing that.
So in terms of relationships, have you guys explored the potential of doing something either formal or informal with UNCA?
So we have a great relationship with UNCA. You know, as kind of our local D1, it makes a lot of sense for who we are and what we do to have a great relationship with them. And we actually are in conversations in kind of crossing over and conducting an event this fall that will bring the two brands, for lack of a better word, together to do what I just said, and that's to push soccer forward in Asheville and Western North Carolina forward. You know, we want what's best for Asheville City, but we think that what's best for Asheville City is, you know, pushing the game forward, and we think that UNCA's developing programs is certainly a positive in that respect.
Yeah, I always love the cross-pollination of the UNCA players on the club and yep. then kind of taking that back. I'm actually setting up interviews with both Coach Vera and Manel.
Yes.
This week. So okay. I'm sure they obviously know, but I'll also ask them the same thing. Sponsorships. Is the sponsorship with Highwire continuing? Is this something that's on a year-to-year up in the air sort of situation?
We certainly hope so. So Highwire for us has just been a game changer. And I'm sure, you know, if you ask everyone that about their title sponsor, that's what they're going to tell you. But it really is true for us and Highwire. You know, last year when we started this project and we went out and talked to people about what we're doing, you know, most people, it was just really hard to explain what it was. You know, I think most people just thought it was like we were creating another team in ABASA, which yeah. does phenomenal work, but what we were doing was just different than that. It was just hard to explain. from the very beginning, Highwire has just supported us wholeheartedly in this project. And we love that they've been there from the beginning, and we certainly hope to continue what's been a great partnership. You know, we love going to the Big Top for all of our events, and I think all of our supporters do as well. And I think it's been great for Highwire as well to really kind of cement that hold in the soccer community.
Yeah, they're certainly, I would like to think, out of the other sponsorships in our division, you know, you've got Volkswagen, you've got whatever medical group Greenville has, but I don't necessarily know that there's another club whose sponsor is so intrinsically kind of involved, woven into the fabric of the city that they play in. It's one of my favorite things about the club, without a shadow of a doubt.
When we went out for sponsorship, you know, it was, you know, as you know, as a supporter, the title sponsorship of a soccer club is just such a special thing. It's so unique in that it becomes synonymous with the club itself. And, you know, from a Chelsea standpoint, since you so politely pointed that out, you know, when Samsung dropped, you know, you would think it's, you know, just a sponsor, but it had been there for so long that it's part of Chelsea, and it's something that's so unique to soccer. It doesn't exist anywhere else. And I think that Highwire has certainly done that, where it's really hard to think about Asheville City Soccer Club without Highwire at this point.
Yeah,
and vice versa.
And you're right, because it continues to be woven in ways I didn't even think about until you just said that. But all the way from the kit, obviously, but to the schedule on the back of the cans, which is, you know, kind of a marketing device unto itself, but then to the game day experience. You know, Chattanooga's not rolling around a bunch of Volkswagens at halftime, but people come out to the games for that game day experience, which Highwire is just primary to.
Yep.
So one of the things, Ryan, I know I've mentioned in the past that it really caught me off guard last season, was when, after Trinidad and Tobago beat the U.S. men's national team, the morning after, you actually released a club official statement. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of found this a little pretentious at the time, thinking, you know, hey, we've got a year under our belt. It was a successful year. I don't think this club needs to be making, you know, official statements on large national matters. And one of the things that kind of caught me off guard there was it said something along the lines of, this failure gives us the opportunity to make changes necessary for the United States to not only qualify for the World Cup consistently, but to win it. And that made me kind of step back for a second. What I don't think I understood at the time was that you guys had a plan. And the part of the plan that I was missing, and that you guys kind of eventually followed up on, was you very specifically stated in that statement that you needed to ask uncomfortable questions and that you needed to think globally, act locally, in an approach to improve soccer in the country. And one of the first ways I know that you've done this is the Just Play initiative. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about that? I think most people listening to this would know about the balls, the Nike balls that went out, but I don't know that everybody knows as much about, like, what you did in terms of putting players in community centers this summer. Sure. And what you have planned for the open streets coming up in September.
Sure. Yeah, so actually the first step in that was the launch of the women's team, which happened a few weeks after that. And we felt that women's soccer is the gold standard in this country, and they've won the World Cup 3 times. So the men in that regard have a ton to learn from what it means to win at a high level. And that can't be understated. And I think that we saw that play out this summer with the excellence that the women brought to Asheville City. So that's an important piece, is really having a cohesive club driving towards that goal. And then obviously the Just Play initiative is a huge piece of this. Overall, the idea is just that soccer has gotten too complicated, and especially for a game that is so simple and so accessible, should be accessible. So that's our goal, So as you mentioned, we donate a ball to an underserved youth for every season ticket that we sell. And this year that number hit 1,000. So we're very happy about that. But yeah, the most meaningful thing is getting people involved with Asheville City into the community so that young kids can see people who, you know, look and sound like them at this level and really show them that, you know, what's attainable through this game. And through that, this summer, we had the vast majority of both of our teams participate at all of the City of Asheville recreation centers, from Stevens Lee to Montford, all over. And for me, it was more than any win or game-winning goal. The most enjoyable part of the summer was to see our players interact with kids in just such a great, you know, open and happy way. I mean, they enjoy getting the balls too. That they really like getting the balls. But just being there and watching them interact with our players is really special. And especially when it's soccer, when it's a sport that isn't at the forefront of a lot of these kids' minds. It's not something that they play regularly, and it's just great to see them having fun and kind of watching it, you know, kind of flicker in their eye that, you know, this is a really fun thing to do, and it's so easy to do. You can do it anywhere. All you need is a ball. Which, moving into open streets, is just another way of showing that you don't need. I mean, the leagues we play in is a perfect example that you don't need a perfect pitch to play on. we know that all too well. But you don't even need grass. All you need is a ball, and you can just go out in the street or the sidewalk and your living room and kick it around and play. And we think that around the world, that's where a love of the game is developed. It's not necessarily on a travel team. I think travel teams are great, and they have their place in development of soccer in this country. But I don't think that's where Messi, Ronaldo, or Neymar, you know, learned to love the game. It was just kicking a ball around. So
even kind of building off of that, can you explain a little bit about what's happened with Asheville Shield in terms of their coaching staff and the cohesion with the club?
Sure. Yeah. So we have great working relationships with all of the youth clubs in town, from Shield, as you mentioned, but ABYSA and HFC. We have a working relationship with the YMCA, who put on, you know, exclusively rec programs, and ABASA, who does probably the best adult soccer that I've seen anywhere in the country. So one of the great benefits of the club just in 2 years has been our players who come to Asheville just for Asheville City. That's the reason they're here. Choose to stay and put down roots and become involved in the community and coach. I think if our goal really is to change and move U.S. soccer forward through a think global, act local perspective, one of the best ways for us to do that is to raise the coaching level by having high-level athletes get involved in coaching, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. And I think that's a great thing, and that's happened at all the clubs across town. I think it's phenomenal.
So we have Tom Dealey, who's the director of football, basically, for the Shield.
Correct.
Yep. And then Jennifer and Elma are both coaching?
Yes, and more to come. So there's even more roots being put down, which it's definitely one of my favorite things that have developed from this project.
Yeah, and I think what's kind of really unique about that, and I don't know if it's happening in Chattanooga yet or if not enough time has passed by, but the first one that pops to mind is Megan McAllister, where potentially, you know, she has gone on to do great things at Western, but she did great things at AC before that. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of replicate that going forwards, you know, what if Tom, Jennifer, and Elma are now coaching the next Megan, who
Absolutely.
Could go on to do something amazing in college, but then come back and play for Asheville? That first kind of Asheville Shield alumni that goes on and then comes back for the city based on that coaching. It's a snake eating its own tail, but more beneficial. Will the club have a presence at the Beer City Cup?
Yes, we're actually a presenting sponsor of Beer City Cup this year. So I think Beer City Cup is one of the coolest things that Asheville Soccer has to offer. And really, it's the largest tournament of its kind in the country. And I think the world needs to know it. So, you know, one of our biggest jobs will be kind of promoting that through the channels that we've developed over the last couple of years. And People know about it. You know, the guys who run Chattanooga, they were actually working to get into the tournament. So I know that there's a huge demand for people, not just around here, but nationally, internationally.
I think there's three international clubs
that come in for the weekend. So it's a great event. And we're thrilled to be a part of it.
So in your Reddit AMA last year,
it's ancient history.
I was there too. That was like a pre-podcast. But you mentioned that you were going to begin to aggressively market the club. Did you think you did that this past year? One of the things Pat and I talked about on the last podcast was, you know, two-month season, 10 months off season.
Yeah.
And we so often feel that, you know, come December, people are forgetting about the club. The fervor kind of dies down. And you can kind of see that, like, if you guys put it on an event next week, I bet you would have very good attendance. When the South Slope Blues do something in December, it really kind of truncates down.
Right.
What are your branding efforts? What do you have on the plate in terms of making sure that Asheville doesn't forget about the clubs, plural, right, during the 10 months?
Yeah, that's a great point. So that our extensive off season does present unique challenges to us. So one of our biggest efforts moving forward this year will be to have more events throughout the year. And that's working with partners like Beer City Cup, like UNCA, like the South Slope Blues. The South Slope Blues have some great ideas in the works, I know of, that I think will get people excited in the off season. But really building out the calendar so that Asheville City does have a presence year round. And it is a priority of ours, and we did take a step forward this year in doing this and marketing the club, not just to people who love soccer, because, you know, as is clear through 2 years, you know, we have that buy-in from the soccer community. But even personally for me, you know, I didn't grow up a soccer person, so I know that there are people out there that don't know they love soccer yet. And so we want to market to those people as well to come out and see what it's like at Memorial Stadium, because I think the soccer is a big piece of that, but I think it's more than that. I think it's Asheville itself on display. Everything that's great about living in Asheville, you know, Memorial Stadium on an Asheville City game night is kind of a microcosm of that. And I think that people, you know, soccer lovers and people who don't know they love it yet can get behind that. So that's an effort of ours as well, is to really expand and get everyone involved in what we're doing.
So last question. I'm a little bit of a kit nerd. When are you guys going to release the new kit for next year?
That's a great question. So the way we do, obviously, our season tickets is we do have to have a new kit every year. And this year we went outside the box, and I think it was a hit. It was received really well. It'll be really interesting to see where we are, like 5 to 7 years, how crazy we have to make the kit every year to switch it up. But we have some preliminary sketches out.
Do you have to buy something within what Nike already puts out there?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. We have some options. But Nike does pretty good work. I mean, their design team gets paid a heck of a lot more than our design team does. So, but yeah, you know, we'll have that in the works, and I'm confident that we'll put something out that people will love and be just as excited as this past year with the vertical stripes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Anytime.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with Bruce. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some sunners.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Thank you to Audionautics for our music, and find us on social media at your_smarter on Twitter and at your_smarter_than_us@gmail.com.